is working.
Well, let's make the point that we're all files.
We are standing for the rights of those individuals, the Americans, and the Union, and against border, against border, you will be taught us the tradition, and will continue to be the tradition of all files, or I may get a term of words, somebody, I might give you a chance to inspire, but, we should have a debate, let them see what is in one.
How damage is.
Any further word on?
Yeah, he's going to be over to see me today, this morning, hopefully sometime.
So you get that, I'll be able to talk to you.
All right, sir.
I'm busy until about 1 o'clock, and after that, I'm like, anytime you're through, I'd like to see what everything has, so we've got something, but I'm just seeing what it is.
The reason I thought we ought to talk this morning is because in our conversations, I have the impression that you don't know everything I know. And it makes it very difficult for you to make judgments that only you can make on some of these things. And I thought that
you got it. In other words, I got to know why you view something.
Well,
that we shouldn't unravel something.
Let me give you my overall first.
Your judgment as to where it stands and where we would go.
I think that there's no doubt about the seriousness of the problem we've got. We have a cancer within. Close to the presidency, it's growing. It's growing daily. It's compounding. It grows geometrically now because it compounds itself. That'll be clear as I explain, some of the details of why it is. And it basically is because, one, we're being blackmailed. Two, people are going to start perjuring themselves very quickly that have not had to perjure themselves to protect other people and the like. And that is just. And there's no assurance that won't bust. So let me give you the sort of basic fact, talking first about the Watergate, and then about Segretti, and about some of the peripheral items that have come up. First of all, on the Watergate, how did it all start? Where did it start? It started with an instruction to me from Bob Holliman to see if we could set up a perfectly legitimate campaign intelligence operation over at the re-election committee. Not being in this business, I turned to somebody who had been in this business, Jack Caulfield, who was, I don't know if you remember Jack or not, he was your original bodyguard before they had candidate protection, an old New York City policeman. Jack had worked for John and then was transferred to my office. And I said, Jack, come up with a plan that, is the normal infiltration and, buying information from secretaries and all that sort of thing. He did. He put together a plan, was kicked around, and I went to Ehrlichman with it, and went to Mitchell with it, and the consensus was that Caulfield wasn't the man to do this. In retrospect, that might have been a bad call, because he is an incredibly cautious person and wouldn't have put the situation to where it is today. All right, after rejecting that, I said, we still need something. So I was told to look around for somebody that could go over to 1701 and do this. And that's when I came up with Gordon Liddy, who they needed a lawyer. Gordon had an intelligence background from his FBI service. I was aware of the fact that he had done some extremely sensitive things for the White House while he'd been at the White House, and he'd apparently done them well, going out into Ellsberg's doctor's office and things like this. He'd worked with leaks. He, tracked these things down. So the report that I got from Crowe was that he was a hell of a good man, and not only that, a good lawyer, and could set up a proper operation. So we talked to Liddy. Liddy was interested in doing it. Took Liddy over to meet Mitchell. Mitchell thought highly of him because apparently Mitchell was partially involved in his coming to the White House to work for Crowe. Liddy had been at Treasury before that. Then Liddy was told to put together his plan, how he would run an intelligence operation. And this was after he was hired over there at the committee. Magruder called me in January and said, I'd like to have you come over and see Liddy's plan. January of 72. Like, you come over to Mitchell's office and sit in on a meeting where Liddy's going to lay his plan out. I said, well, I don't really know as I'm the man, but if you want me there, I'll be happy to. So I came over, and Liddy laid out a million-dollar plan that was the most incredible thing I have ever laid my eyes on, all in codes and involved black bag operations, kidnapping, providing prostitutes, to weaken the opposition, bugging, mugging teams. It was just an incredible thing. And Mitchell just virtually sat there puffing and laughing. I could tell, because after Liddy left the office, I said, "That's the most incredible thing I've ever seen." He said, "I agree." And so he was told to go back to the drawing board and come up with something realistic. So there was a second meeting. They asked me to come over that. I came into the tail end of the meeting. I wasn't there for the first part of that. I don't know how long the meeting lasted. At this point, they were discussing again, bugging, kidnapping, and the like. And at this point, I said, right in front of everybody, very clearly, I said, "These are not the sort of things, one, that are ever to be discussed in the office of the Attorney General of the United States, where he still was. And I'm personally incensed. I'm trying to get Mitchell off the hook, because he's a nice person, doesn't like to say no under when people he's going to have to work with." So I let it be known. I said, "You all pack that stuff up and get the hell out of here, because you just can't talk this way in this office, and you should re-examine your whole thinking." Came back.
Who else was present?
It was Magruder, Mitchell, Liddy, and myself. I came back right after the meeting and told Bob. I said, "Bob, we got a growing disaster on our hands if they're thinking this way." And I said, "The White House has got to stay out of this, and I frankly am not going to be involved in it." He said, "I agree, John." And I thought at that point the thing was turned off. That's the last I heard of it, when I thought it was turned off, because it was an absurd proposal. Liddy, I did have dealings with him afterwards. We never talked about it. Now, that would be hard to believe for some people, but we never did. Just the fact of the matter.
Well, you were talking about other things.
We had so many other things.
Yes, we were talking about it.
Now,
because you were an advisor, I understand. I mean, you're going to ask what are the campaign laws? I did that for you. You have all the talking. You were making all the laws. Go ahead.
Now, so Liddy went back after that and was over to 1701. Committee, and this is where I come in, just having put the pieces together after the fact, as to what I can put together, what happened. Liddy sat over there and tried to come up with another plan that he could sell. One, they were talking, saying he was asking for too much money, and I don't think they were discounting the illegal points at this, after, you know, Jeff is not a lawyer, he didn't know whether this was the way the game was played or not, and what it was all about. So they came up with apparently another plan. But they couldn't get it approved by anybody over there. So Liddy and Hunt apparently came to see Chuck Colson. And Chuck Colson picked up the telephone and called Magruder and said, "You all either fish or cut bait. This is absurd to have these guys over there and not using them. And if you're not going to use them, I may use them." Things of this nature. This was apparently in February of 72. I can only assume, because of his close relationship with Hunt, he had a damn good idea of what they were talking about. A damn good idea. He would probably deny it today and probably get away with denying it. But unless Hunt blows on it.
But then Hunt isn't enough. They're stupid.
Probably. But Liddy was there also, and if Liddy were to blow. Yeah. I'll go back over that and check where the soft spots are.
That Colson, do you think was the person who...
I think he helped to get the thing off the dime. Now, something else occurs, though.
And Colson, has he talked to anybody here?
No, I think this is an independent... No, I don't think so. Now, but here's the other thing, where the next thing comes in the chain. I think that Bob was assuming that they had something that was proper over there, some intelligence gathering operation that Liddy was operating. And through Strawn, who was his tickler, he started pushing them to get some information. And they took that as a signal. Magruder took that as a signal to probably go to Mitchell and say, "They're pushing us like crazy for this from the White House." And so Mitchell probably puffed on his pipe and said, "Go ahead." And never really reflected on what it was all about. So they had some plan that obviously had, I gather, different targets they were going to go after. They were going to infiltrate and bug and do all this sort of thing to a lot of these targets. It's knowledge I have after the fact. And apparently they had after they had initially broken in and bugged the Democratic National Committee, they were getting information. The information was coming over here to Strawn. Some of it was given to Haldeman. There's no doubt about it.
Did he know what it was?
I don't really know if
not
he would. Not necessarily. That's not necessarily.
Strawn
knew it was Strawn. No doubt about it. And whether Strawn, I've never wanted to press these people on these points because it hurts them to give up that next inch. So I have to piece things together. All right, so Strawn was aware, receiving information, reporting to Bob. At one point, Bob even gave instructions to change their capabilities from Muskie to McGovern. And it passed this back through Strawn to Magruder and apparently to Liddy, and Liddy was starting to make arrangements to go in and bug the McGovern operation. They'd have done
preliminary. They had never bugged Muskie.
No, they hadn't, but they had infiltrated it by a secretary and a chauffeur. Nothing illegal about that. Now, so the information was coming over here, and then I finally, after the next point in time where I became aware of anything, was on June 17th, when I got the word that there'd been this break-in at the Democratic National Committee, and somebody from the committee had been caught, from our committee, had been caught in the DNC. And I said, oh my God, that, I can only, mentally putting the pieces together. I knew what it was. So I called Liddy on that Monday morning. I said, Gordon, I said, first I want to know if anybody in the White House was involved in this. And he said, no, they weren't. I said, well, I want to know how in God's name this happened. And he said, well, I was pushed without mercy by Magruder to get in there, get more information. If the information was not satisfactory, Magruder said, the White House is not happy with what we're getting.
The White House.
Well, I think it was probably Strawn thinking that Bob wanted things. And because I've seen that happen on other occasions where things have been said to be of very prime importance.
Why didn't really want to go to China? I'm just trying to think as to why that. We just finished the Moscow trip.
That's right.
The Democrats were just nominated and got the governor. I mean, for Christ's sakes, I mean, what the hell would he do? I mean, I didn't see going for her. I mean, I'd love to say I can see the pressure, but I don't see why all the pressure would have been on them.
I don't know, other than the fact that they might have been looking for information about
the conventions. Well, that's right.
Because I understand also after the fact that there was a plan to bug Larry O'Brien's suite down in Florida.
Yeah.
So, Liddy told me that, this is what had happened and this is why.
Liddy told me he was planning. Where did he learn there was something?
Beg your pardon?
Where did you learn of the plans of the Grand O'Brien's suite?
From Magruder, long after the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, Magruder's totally knowledgeable on the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right, now, we've gone through the trial. I don't know if Mitchell has perjured himself in the grand jury or not. Mitchell. I don't know how much knowledge he actually had. I know that Magruder has perjured himself in the grand jury. I know that Porter has perjured himself in the grand jury. He's one of Magruder's deputies. That they set up this scenario, which they ran by me. They said, how about this? I said, well, I don't know. If this is what you're going to hang on, fine. But again,
what did they say?
They said, as they said before the trial and the grand jury, that Liddy had come over as a counsel, and we knew he had these capacities to do legitimate intelligence. We had no idea what he was doing. He was given an authorization of $250,000 to collect information because our surrogates were out on the road. They had no protection. We had information that there were going to be demonstrations against them, that we had to have a plan to get information as to what liabilities they were going to be confronted with. And Liddy was charged with doing this. We had no knowledge that he was going to bug the DNC.
That's not true.
That's right.
Magruder did know that.
Magruder specifically instructed him to go back in the DNC.
He did?
Yes.
You know that? Yeah, I see. Okay.
I honestly believe that no one over here knew that. I know, as God is my maker, I had no knowledge that they were going to do this. But
you're not teaching Bob.
Bob, I don't believe, specifically knew they were going in there. I don't think he did. I think he knew there was a capacity to do this, but he wasn't giving it specific direction.
Strong.
I think Strong did know. All right. So, those people are in trouble as a result of the grand jury and the trial. Mitchell, of course, was never called during the trial. Now,
Mitchell has given the sworn statement.
Yes, sir.
To the jury.
To the grand jury.
Did he go for it?
We had an arrangement whereby he went down to, with several of the, because it was, you know, the heat of this thing and the implications on the election, we made an arrangement where they could quietly go into the Department of Justice and have one of the assistant U.S. attorneys come over and take their testimony and then read it before the grand jury. That's right. Mitchell was actually called before the grand jury. The grand jury would not settle for less. The jurors wanted him.
And he went.
I don't know what he said, so I've never seen a transcript of the grand jury. Now, what has happened post June 17th? Well, I was under pretty clear instructions not really to investigate this, but this is something that just could have been disastrous on the election if it had all hell had broken loose. And I worked on a theory of containment to try to hold it right where it was.
Right.
There's no doubt that I was totally aware of what the Bureau was doing at all times. I was totally aware of what the grand jury was doing. I knew what witnesses were going to be called. I knew what they were going to be asked. And I had to. Because Peterson's a soldier. He kept me informed. He told me when we had problems, where we had problems, and the like. He believes in you. He believes in this administration. This administration has made him. I don't think he's done anything improper, but he did make sure the investigation was narrowed down to the very, very fine criminal things, which was a break for us. There's no doubt about it. They ran that investigation out to the fullest extent they could follow a lead, and that was it.
But why is the word, I suppose, you criticize for not doing that job? Why didn't he call Walton? Why didn't he get his statement from Colson? Oh, they didn't get Colson.
That's right. But see, the thing is, based on their FBI interviews, there was no reason to follow up. There were no leads there. Colson said, I have no knowledge of this, to the FBI. Strong said, I have no knowledge of, you know, they didn't ask Strong any Watergate questions. They asked him about Segretti. Just said, what's your connection with Liddy? And he just said, well, you know, I just met him over there. And they never really pressed him. They didn't, you know, they looked. Strong appeared as a result of some coaching to be the dumbest paper pusher in the bowels of the White House. All right, now, post June 17th, these guys immediately, it was very, very interesting. Liddy, for example, the Friday before, on the 15th, 16th of June, had been in Henry Peterson's office with another member of my staff on campaign compliance problems, joking. After the incident, he ran Kleinies down at Burning Tree Country Club and told him that you've got to get my men out of jail, which was kind of a Kleinies just said, you get the hell out of here, kid. Whatever you've got to say, just say to somebody else, don't bother me. But this has never come up. Liddy said that, you know, they all got counsel instantly and said that, you know, we'll ride this thing out. All right, then they started making demands. Hey, we got to have attorney's fees. We don't have any money ourselves, and you're asking us to take this through the election. All right, so arrangements were made through Mitchell initiating it in discussions, but I was present that these guys had to be taken care of. Their attorney's fees had to be done. Kalmbach was brought in. Kalmbach raised some cash. They were, you know.
They put that up at the Carter Cuban
Committee. Yeah, they had a Cuban committee, and they had some of it was given to Hunt's lawyer, who in turn passed it out. This, you know, when Hunt's wife was flying to Chicago with $10,000, she was actually, I understand, after the fact now, was going to pass that money to one of the Cubans to meet him in Chicago and pass it to somebody there.
Certainly keep that cover, whatever it's worth.
Oh, well, that's the most troublesome post thing, because one, Bob is involved in that, John is involved in that, I'm involved in that, Mitchell is involved in that, and that's an obstruction of justice.
In other words, the fact that we're in your danger of witness.
That's right.
How is Bob?
Well, they ran out of money over there. Bob had $350,000 in a safe over here. It was really set aside for polling purposes. And there was no other source of money, so they came over here and said, you all got to give us some money.
Okay.
I had to go to Bob and say, Bob, you know, you got to have some, they need some money over there. He said, what for? And so I had to tell him what it was for, because he wasn't about to just send money over there willy-nilly. And John was involved in those discussions, and we decided, you know, that, you know, that there was no price too high to pay to let this thing blow up in front of the election.
I think you should handle that pretty
bad. Oh, I think we can. That's right. I think we can, too. But now, here's what's happening right now. What sort of brings matters to the... This is one, this is going to be a continual blackmail operation by Hunt and Liddy and the Cubans, no doubt about it, and McCord, who is another one involved. McCord has asked for nothing. McCord did ask to meet with somebody, and it was Jack Caulfield, who is his old friend, who got him hired over there. And when Caulfield had him hired, he was a perfectly legitimate security man. And he wanted to know, well, you know, he wanted to talk about commutation and things like that. And as you know, Coulson has talked indirectly to Hunt about commutation. All these things are bad in that they're problems, they're promises, they're commitments. They're the very sort of thing that the Senate's going to be looking most for. I don't think they can find it, frankly.
Pretty hard.
Pretty hard, damn hard. It's all cash.
Pretty hard as far as witnesses
are concerned. That's right. Now, the blackmail is continuing. Hunt called one of the lawyers from the re-election committee on last Friday to meet with him on over the weekend. The guy came in to me, see me, because he had a message directly from Hunt to me for the first time.
On bail.
Pardon?
On bail.
Hunt is on bail. Correct. Hunt now is demanding another $72,000 for his own personal expenses, another $50,000 to pay his attorney's fees, $120,000. Wanted it by the close of business yesterday, because he says, I'm going to be sentenced on Friday, and I've got to be able to get my financial affairs in order. I told this fellow O'Brien, if you were, I said, you came to the wrong man, fellow. I'm not involved in the money. Don't know a thing about it. I can't help you. He said, you better scramble around elsewhere. Now, O'Brien is a ball player. He carried tremendous water for us.
He's a much lawyer.
No, he is our lawyer at the re-election committee.
I see.
So he's safe. There's no problem there. But it raises the whole question of Hunt now has made a direct threat against Ehrlichman as a result of this. This is his blackmail. He says, I will bring John Ehrlichman down to his knees and put him in jail. I have done enough seamy things for Ian Krogh that they'll never survive it.
What's that on Ellsberg?
Ellsberg and apparently some other things. I don't know the full extent of it. I don't either, and I hate to learn some of these things. So that's that situation. Now, where are the soft points? How many people know about this? Well, let me go one step further in this whole thing. The Cubans that were used in the Watergate were also the same Cubans that Hunt and Liddy used for this California Ellsberg thing, the break-in out there. So they're aware of that. How high their knowledge is something else. Hunt and Liddy, of course, are totally aware of it and the fact that it was right out of the White House.
I don't know what the
hell he is. I don't either. Mr. President, there have been a couple things around here that I've gotten wind of. There was one time a desire to do a second-story job in the Brookings Institute where they had the Pentagon papers. And I flew to California because I was told that John had instructed it, and he said I really had some misimpression, but for Christ's sake, turn it off. And I did. I came back and turned it off because, you know, the risk is minimal and the gain is fantastic. It's something else. But with a low risk and no gain, it's not worth it. Well, who knows about this all now? All right, you've got the Cuban lawyers, a man by the name of Rockblatt, who is a no-good, publicity-seeking son of a bitch, to be very frank with. He's had to be turned down and tuned off. He was can by his own people because they didn't trust him. They were trying to run a different route than he wanted to run. He didn't want him to plead guilty. He wants to represent him before the Senate. So F. Lee Bailey, who was the partner of one of the men representing McCord, got in and cooled Rockflat down. So F. Lee Bailey has got knowledge. Hunt's lawyer, a man by the name of Pittman, who's an excellent criminal lawyer from the Democratic era of Bobby Kennedy. You've got knowledge. Not only all the direct knowledge that Hunt and Liddy have, as well as all the hearsay they have. You've got the two lawyers over at the re-election committee who did an investigation to find out the facts. Slowly, they got the whole picture. They're solid, but they know. You've got then an awful lot of all the principals involved know. Some people's wives know. There's no doubt about that. Mrs. Hunt was the savviest woman in the world. She had the whole picture together. Yeah, it's apparently she was the pillar of strength in that family before the death. And
greatest happiness. The basis, as a matter of fact, there was a discussion between Hunt's problem and his wife. And of course, the computation could be considered on the basis of his wife. That's the only discussion I ever had with anybody.
Right. So that's it. That's the extent of the knowledge. Now, where are the soft spots on this? Well, first of all, there's the problem of the continued blackmail, which will not only go on now, it'll go on when these people are in prison, and it will compound the obstruction of justice situation. It'll cost money. It's dangerous. Nobody, I think people around here are not pros at this sort of thing. This sort of thing mafia people can do. Washing money, getting clean money, and things like that. We just don't know about those things. We're not criminals. We're not used to dealing in that business. It's a tough thing to know how to do. That's right. It's a real problem as to whether we can even do it. Plus, there's a real problem in raising money. Mitchell has been working on raising some money, feeling he's got, he's one of the ones with the most to lose. But there's no denying the fact that the White House and Ehrlichman, Holloman, and Dean are involved in some of the early money decisions.
So much money.
I would say these people are going to cost $1 million over the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You, on the money, if you need the money, you can get the money.
Well, I think that we're...
What I mean is, you can get $1 million, and you can get it in cash. I know where it can be gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not easy, but it can be done. But the question is, who the hell would handle it?
That's right.
The idea,
well, I would think that would be something that Mitchell ought to be charged with.
I think so, too.
And get some pros to help him.
Let me say, there shouldn't be a lot of people running around getting money.
Well, he's got one person doing it, who I'm not sure is... You've got Fred LaRue doing it. Now, Fred started out going out trying to solicit money from all kinds of people, and I learned about that, and I said, my God, it's just awful. Don't do it. People are going to ask what the money's for. He's apparently talked to Tom Pappas. And Pappas has agreed to come up with a sizable amount, I gather, from this.
Well,
that's right.
You want to put that through, would you put that through, just thinking out loud here at the moment, would you put that through the Cuban committee?
No.
$100 is going to be, as well as cash money, so how that ever comes out, are you going to handle it? Is the Cuban committee the obstruction of justice?
Well, I've got a priest. They got a priest in it.
Would you like to put, would that give a little bit of a cover?
That would give some for the Cubans and possibly Hunt.
Yeah.
Then you've got Liddy, and McCord is not accepting any money, so he's not a bought man right now.
Okay.
All right, let me continue a little bit here now. When I say this is a growing cancer, I say it for reasons like this. Bud Krogh, in his testimony before the grand jury was forced to perjure himself, is haunted by it. Bud said, I haven't had a pleasant day on the job. Said, I have not had a pleasant day on my job. He talked to Perrin, he said, do these days, I've told my wife all about this, the curtain may ring down one of these days. And I may have to face the music, which I'm perfectly willing to do.
What do you perjure yourself on again?
Did he know the Cubans? He did.
He said he did.
That's right. They didn't press him hard. It was
he might be able to. I'm just trying to think. Perjure yourself a hard rap to prove what you can say about it.
Well, so that's the first. That's one perjury. Now, Mitchell and Magruder are potential perjuries. There's always the possibility of any one of these individuals blowing. Hunt, Liddy's in jail right now. He's serving his, trying to get good time right now. I think Liddy is probably, in his own bizarre way, the strongest of all of them. So there's that possibility.
Well, your major controls.
That's right.
I think. Because
he knows so much. He knows so much, right. He could sink Chuck Colson. Apparently he's quite distressed with Colson. He thinks Colson's abandoned him. Colson was to meet with him when he was out there. After Nellie had left the White House, he met with him through his lawyer. Hunt raised the question that he wanted money. Colson's lawyer told him that Colson wasn't doing anything with money, and Hunt took offense to that immediately, that Colson had abandoned him. I think I've talked to Mitchell about that last night,
That's right.
Either that or let it all blow right now. Well, that's the question.
Go ahead. The other. Go.
All right. Now we've got. Now we've got Kalmbach. Kalmbach received. At the close of the '68 campaign in January of '69, he got $1,700,000 to be custodian for. That came down from New York and was placed in safe deposit boxes here. Some other people were on the boxes, and ultimately the money was taken out to California. All right. There is knowledge of the fact that he did start with $1,000,007. Several people know this. Now, since '69, he's spent a good deal of this money, and accounting for it is going to be very difficult for Herb. For example, he spent close to $500,000 on private polling. Now, that just opens up a whole new thing. It's not illegal, but it's more of the same sort of thing. No, I don't think so.
Everybody does.
That's right. There's nothing criminal about it. It was private poll. It was proper money.
Poll all through the years.
That's right. He sent $400,000, as he described to me, somewhere in the South for another candidate. I assume this was $400 that went
Wallace.
To Wallace, right? He has maintained a man. Who I only know by the name of Tony, who is the fellow who did the Chappaquiddick study and other odd jobs like that. Nothing illegal, but explosive. I don't know of anything that Herb has done that is illegal, other than the fact that he doesn't want to blow the whistle on a lot of people and may find himself in a perjury situation. What will happen is when they call him up there, and he of course has no immunity, they'll say, how did you pay Mr. Segretti? Well, I had cash on hand. Well, how much cash did you have on hand? Where did you go from there? Where did you get the cash? A whole series of questions. His bank records indicate he had cash on hand. because some of these were set up in trustee accounts.
How would you handle that, John, for example? You just have to put the whole thing down. I don't think, I mean, I don't mind the $500,000, and I don't mind the $400,000 for activities.
That doesn't bother me either. There's, as I say, Herb's problems are politically embarrassing, but not criminal.
Well, they're embarrassing, sure. He just handled matters that were between the campaign before we were surveys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's no need to account for that. No law requires him to account for that.
Right. Now,
the source of the money, there's no illegality in having a surplus as a cash.
No, the money, because it's always been argued by Sam, came from pre-convention.
Pre-convention.
And pre-primary for the 68 race.
Okay.
Was just set aside. That all can be explained. I think that the other vulnerabilities. We've got a runaway grand jury up in the Southern District.
Yeah.
Thereafter, Mitchell and stands on some sort of bribe or influence peddling with Vesco. They're also going to try to drag Ehrlichman into that. Apparently Ehrlichman had some meetings with Vesco also. Don Nixon Jr. came in to see John a couple times about the problem. But there's a fact of the matter. That's right.
Is it Ehrlichman totally clean?
Yeah, well, I think the White House, no one has done anything for Vesco.
Not even prosecuted.
No.
Would Ehrlichman incidentally have a computer there?
For that grand jury? Yes, he could very well.
We could, there's no one there.
Not really. Criminal charge.
Criminal charge, yeah, those charges, my Henry, go ahead.
Right, that's a little different. I think that would be dynamite to defend against that.
Also, he distinguishes it. He says criminal charge, he'd be glad to use the Flanagan analogy.
Right. Well, that's pretty much the overall picture, and probably the most troublesome thing. Well, the Segretti thing, let's get down to that. I think Bob has indicated to me, he told you a lot of it, that he indeed did authorize it. He didn't authorize anything like ultimately evolved. He was aware of it. He was aware that Chapin and Strong were looking for somebody. Again, this is one that it is potential that Dwight J. Chapin could have a felony charge against him in this, because he's got a felony, because he has to disprove a negative. The negative is that he didn't control and direct Segretti.
When the felony being perjury again?
No, the felony, this in essence has been a potential use of one of the civil rights statutes for anybody who interferes with a candidate for national office, interferes with their campaign in any way.
Why is it under civil rights statute to pick up any of these clowns that are demonstrating against us?
Well, I've argued that they use that for that very purpose.
Really?
Yes, I have. And
those were interfering with the campaign.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. But
it's incredible, and I think I'm not as concerned about that, because it's so bad the way it's been put out on the PR side, and I think you'll eventually end up on the PR side and very confused. And it'll look bad in that period, but I don't know. I can't see it right. I may be wrong.
Well, what really bothers me is if this growing situation, as I say, it is growing because of the continued need to provide support for the Watergate people who are going to hold us up for everything they've got.
That's right.
And the need for some people to perjure themselves as they go down the road here. If this thing ever blows and we're in a cover-up situation, I think it would be extremely damaging to you and the...
The whole concept of administration justice.
That's right. That's what really troubles me. For example, what happens if it starts breaking and they do find a criminal case against a Haldeman, a Dean, a Mitchell, an Ehrlichman? That is...
It comes down to the fact that we have to shed from the container.
That's right. I'm coming down to what I really think is that Bob and John Mitchell and I should sit down and spend a day or however long to figure out One, how this can be carved away from you so it does not damage you or the presidency. Because it just can't. And it's not something, you're not involved in it, and it's something you shouldn't.
That is true.
I know, sir, it is. Well, I just tell from our conversations that, you know, these are things that you have no knowledge of.
You sir, you know,
but it's
bugging me, so. Let me say, I'm keenly aware of the fact that Colson et al. And so forth are doing their best to get information and so forth and so on, but they all do very well and they're supposed to comply with the law.
That's right.
So it's interesting that you say, oh, but really the man, the trigger man was Colson on this.
Well, no, he was one of, he was just in the chain. He helped push the thing.
All the way up and said, he got it.
That's right. I think that with proper coordination with the Department of Justice. Henry Peterson is the only man I know that's bright enough and knowledgeable enough in the criminal laws and the process that could really tell us how this could be put together so it did the maximum to carve it away with a minimum damage to individuals involved. No, I know he doesn't now. I know he doesn't now. I'm talking about somebody who I have over the years grown to have enough faith in. It's possible that he'd have to put him in a very difficult situation as the head of the criminal division of the United States Department of Justice and the oath of office.
I'm talking about your Department of Justice role. I don't see it.
I've been a conduit for information on taking care of people out there who are guilty of crimes.
Oh, you mean like the blackmail?
The blackmail, right.
Well, I wonder if that part of it can be...
problem for the others. They all expect to be out, and that may put you in a position that's just untenable at some point. You know, the Watergate hearing is just over. Hunt now demanding clemency, or he's going to blow. And politically, it'd be impossible for you to do it, you know, after everybody.
Right.
I'm not sure that you'll ever be able to deliver on the clemency. It may be just too hot.
You can't do it without the 74 election, that's for sure. But even your point is
that's right. It may further involve you in a way you shouldn't be involved in this.
No, it's wrong, that's for sure.
Well, there have been some bad judgments made. There have been some necessary judgments made.
Before the election.
Before the election, and in a way, there have been necessary ones, you know, before the election. There was no way but to burden this second administration with something that something is not going to go away.
No, it isn't.
It is not going to go away, sir.
Not going to go away. There's the idea that people are going to get tired of all that sort of
thing. Anything will spark it back into life. It's got to be. It's got to be.
Well, it's too much of the partisan interest of others to spark it back.
And it seems to me the only way that.
Let's leave you. I don't think on the obstruction of justice thing. I think that I don't know why.
I guess it's possible. I
think it may be over. Who else can think of it?
Potential criminal liability. I think Ehrlichman does. I think that because this conspiracy that burglarized the Ellsberg office.
What you mean that is provided conference?
Well, the funny thing, let me say something interesting about that. Within the file.
Oh, I saw the picture.
Yeah, the picture. That's not all that buried. And while I think we've got it buried, there's no telling when it's going to pop up. The Cubans could start this whole thing. When the Urban Committee starts running down why this mysterious telephone was here at the White House, listed in the name of a secretary. Some of these secretaries have a little idea about this, and they can be broken down just so fast. That's another thing I missed in the cycle, in the circle. Liddy's secretary, for example, is knowledgeable. Magruder's secretary is knowledgeable.
Sure. So earlier than that, maybe,
But what I'm coming to you today with is I don't have a plan on how to solve it right now. But I think it's at the juncture that we should begin to think in terms of how to cut the losses, how to minimize the further growth of this thing, rather than further compound it by, you know, all of them paying these guys forever. I think we've got to look.
But at the moment, don't you agree that you better get it behind things? I mean, that's where the
the grand jury is going to reconvene next week after Sirica sentences. But that's why I think that, you know, that John and Bob have met with me. They've never met with Mitchell on this. We've never had a real down and out with everybody that has the most to lose. And the most, and it's the most danger for you to have them have criminal liability. I think Bob has a potential criminal liability, frankly. I think, in other words, a lot of these people could be indicted. They might never, be convicted. But just the thought of indictment, I think that'd be devastating.
If, for example, our say, well, let's cut our losses, and we say we're going to go down the road, so we cut our losses, and no more blackmail, and all the rest, and the thing blows, and the guy bought it, and I said, Jesus, you never recover from that, John.
That's right.
It's better to fight it out. Then, you see, that's the other thing. It's better just to fight it out, not let people testify, and so forth, and so on. Now, on the other hand, we realize that we have these weaknesses.
It's what, if we, you know, there are two routes, you know, one is to figure out how to cut the losses and minimize the human impact and get you up and out and away from it in any way, in a way that would never come back to haunt. That's one general alternative. The other is to go down, to the road, just hunker down, fight it at every corner, every turn, don't let people testify. Cover it up is what we're really talking about. Just keep it buried and just hope that we can do it. Hope that we make good decisions at the right time, keep our heads cool, we make the right moves,
and just take the heat.
And just take the heat.
Now, with the second line of attack, we can discuss this in the way if you want to. Still consider my scheme of having you read again in just a very general term, and the leaders, very general.
If we go that route, sir, I can give a show that, you know, is, we can sell, you know, we've been out here selling Wheaties on our position. There's no
the problem that you have for these minefields down the road. I think the most difficult problem is the guys that are going to jail. I think you're right about that. I agree. Now, and also the fact that we're not going to be able to give the clients.
That's right. How long will they take? How long will they sit there? I don't know. We don't know what they'll be sentenced to. There's always the chance.
3 years.
It could be. You know, they haven't announced yet, but it's even higher than that. It's about 50 years. It's all
so ridiculous.
Oh, well, you know what's so incredible is these fellows who...
People break an error and so forth and get 2 years.
What are the other
people? No weapons. No results. What the hell are they talking about?
The individuals who are charged with shooting John Stennis are on the street. They were given, you know, one was put out on his personal recognizance rather than bond. They've got these fellows all stuck with $100,000 bonds. The same judge, Sirica, let one guy who's charged with shooting the United States Senator out on the street.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, it's phenomenal. He is just a peculiar animal. And he set the bond for one of the others. I don't have all the facts, but he set the bond for one of the others somewhere around $50,000 or $60,000. But still, that guy's in, but didn't make bond. But, you know, $60,000 as opposed to $100,000 for these guys is phenomenal.
Well, can you have this meeting with these fellows? I think it's time. It's the essence. I think it's Saturday.